right, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. It is I, your host, Pizza Mind, and I am joined today by Yuan Su, the CTO over at Midas and Nuvo. Yuan, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me here. It's an honor to be invited to one of the reputable podcasts in the industry. So very happy to be here.
Well, there's not that many of us, so you could throw a rock into a basket, and you're gonna pick up pretty much what you threw in there. So, but it's an honor to have you. There's not many people like you in this industry either, so let's get to know you as well. Give us your background of what you were doing before you got into crypto and why you decided to join this industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is quite pure. So I start from a technical career path, starting from age of six. So I start programming age of six. I was invited to a secret room in my elementary school full of Apple computers back then. I was like, oh, what are those things? So they taught us how to draw pictures using programming languages. And there was a programming language called the Logo. For people with some age, they probably know what that is. And we start to program using BASIC. And I really hooked into this world where you can kind of tell computer what to do and do some productivity work for you. So then I start to teach myself a C++ and get familiar with a lot of different development framework. One thing that I'm really proud of during my early childhood was I was able to lock my parents out of my computer. Give myself a total privacy. So whatever I store in my computer, my parents won't be able to know. So it kind of tells you, that's awesome. I really value the data privacy and security a lot. So it's kind of already kind of embedded in my gene. Naturally, I went through the computer science programs in the universities. Then join IBM, those big enterprises, for a very simple reason, because I need the money to pay off the loans and tuitions and get a life. So I was lucky enough to join the database team. So it has a lot of very hardcore programming projects, including the like parallel programming, high performance, and storage. And we also got a chance to work with the Hyperledger team. So for people who don't know what Hyperledger is, it is one of the permission network. A lot of enterprises actually use blockchain technology through Hyperledger. IBM was one of the founding members of the Hyperledger Fabric Foundation. So we got a chance to work with that team. I was quite fascinated by the technology itself, mostly because it's really a paradigm shift in terms of how the power of control is like more decentralized instead of a central entity. For example, if you have only one central entity controlling all the business logic, you kind of, for example, if you run a lottery station and if you're the only one that actually come out the numbers, pretty easily I can kind of rig the numbers so that I can win every time, right? But it's not that possible if the computation is that decentralized. So Hyperledger is a little bit different because it's permission, it has your roles in that. So it's somewhat controlled and centralized. So I look at that, I don't really like it because it seems like there's some limitations, like human-made limitations, mostly from the enterprise world to fully realize the potential of the technology. Then I know, okay, there's another world out there, the public chains like Bitcoins and Ethereums, and those are permissionless open blockchains. And you can do all sorts of things using smart contracts on Ethereum. And recently, now you can do some BRC20 tokens on Bitcoin, which is also very fascinating. I've been looking into the technologies behind Ordinals. It's quite interesting, I would say. So there are a lot of innovations in the space. The fact that the technology, the way the technology gives people the freedom, give the power to start participating or decision-making or participating in the business logic, and have a full transparency. It really fascinates me. It seems like, hey, we're on the verge of a quote-unquote revolution in terms of how the general community is going to be participating in the business instead of just being monetized by the business.
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
Yeah, and there's so many problems that blockchain and the emerging privacy technology can solve, but it's a lot of problems that people aren't really aware of. And we talk on this podcast and many other podcasts talk about the need for privacy and controlling your own data. But I don't think that message is really hammered home to the general public. So today, Elon Musk tweets something of a screenshot of WhatsApp accessing his microphone when he's not using the app, including when he's asleep. WhatsApp just wakes up and starts listening, trying to pick up whatever it can in the background. What in the world is going on over there? There's maybe billions of people at this point that use WhatsApp and rely on it for business. And it turns out this thing is little more than spyware, even though it's supposed to be this encrypted end-to-end communication tool. And it turns out, surprise, surprise, it's been bugged.
Yeah.
So why is privacy so important? And how do we hammer this home to the general public?
Absolutely. It's actually a big topic. So when I talk about data privacy with other people, I always use one analogy. For example, ER wallets, let's see what's the most inclusive way to describe this. Let's assume most of people have driver's license. Let's assume so. Sorry about the young audience. You may not have, but you, in future, you may have a driver's license. So ER wallet, you have a driver's license with you. So imagine instead of having this driver's license in your wallet, you kind of give it to Elon Musk, let's say, because we all know Elon Musk. Say, hey, Elon Musk, I trust my driver's license in your position. So you're going to keep my driver's license going forward. Ask yourself this question. How comfortable are you when you do that? I bet most people won't feel comfortable because, hey, this is really my identity. How can I entrust my identity with someone else? But I can tell you, it's happening every day in the digital world. Your digital identity is actually managed, kept, and accessed all the time by those enterprises, including Amazon, Google, and Facebook. I think Meta. So WhatsApp is part of Meta, right? If I remember correctly.
Yes.
So I can tell you, everyone. In the enterprise world, we consider data as a asset. Your data as an asset. So we always say data is the new gold, meaning that data is actually a new type of asset the enterprise would love to mine and monetize. And the way to monetize is quite simple. They can do analytics. They can sell your data even. Give to the other parties who love to get access to your information. People may wonder why do they get so many scam calls nowadays compared to 20 years ago? 20 years ago, I rarely get scam calls, and now I get like a dozen every day. I no longer pick up the calls anymore because of that. Yeah, because the data has been monetized, and your personal data is no longer your own anymore. And the underlying drive is this drive for profit from enterprises. When they have an easy way to access without even your consent of those your personal data of yours, they will use it. Guarantee you, they will use it because it will drive the profit.
Yeah. And in addition to that, they can also use that to manipulate you. When there's a campaign that's set to marginalize a certain group, which happens everywhere. And if it's not happening currently where you are, well, just wait for another regime to get fraudulently voted in, and then they can come after people who are dissenting towards that. And then they can pull all your history of everything you've ever said, even in private, and declare you a terrorist or the enemy of the state and arrest you, even though you've done nothing wrong. So it's important to not ever put yourself in that situation if possible. But that possible is becoming increasingly more and more difficult. You know, the guy who invented WhatsApp, but when he sold that to Meta, he felt so bad and like a horrible sellout. And then he went and invented Signal. So it's the same developer who invented both of these privacy communication apps. Well, guess what? Signal's bugged also and can't be trusted. So you've got this guy who is either completely incompetent at his job or is completely corrupt with what he's built and can't be trusted either way. So now we need other technologies to come in, and that's where there's many things in the blockchain space now that are trying to solve this digital identity and privacy messaging solution.
Yeah, I think a lot of the problems you just described roots from the underlying design of our existing solutions. The current design relies on a central identity to manage and control the data. And they are responsible for keeping the data secure, keep the data private. Their intention may be well-intended, I would say. Hey, because that's the root of the business. If they cannot make the data secure and private, no one's going to use that. However, many engineering knows, and many software engineering knows, there will be bugs in the system. Even governments may force you to open the backdoor for it because you're the entity that controls the data. So they have a one single point of contact. They can really force you to open the backdoor. I think Elon Musk already revealed that Twitter has that backdoor for the to the government already. They can see all your private messages. So the actual way using the first principle theory is to really solve the root of the problem where currently, the data ownership, unfortunately, is controlled by the entities, those big entities. Like how you entrust your driver's license to Elon Musk, you basically entrust your data, digital entity to a third party, which is not under your control. The right way to solve that problem, fundamental problem, is to reverse the ownership. So basically, the user itself, us, every single user, should have the full control of your data profile. And that's a lot of digital identity or decentralized identity has been focusing on. Now, the challenge as a result of that is, like I tell you, all the enterprises love to use your data, and they almost can't live without your data. Their whole business logic is based on access of your user data, so they still need it. So if we just completely take away their access to your user data, the adoption of the digital identity or the adoption of decentralized identity will be a problem. You can see a lot of pushback. This technology has been around for more than 5 years. The adoption has been so slow because the pushback from the different projects, enterprises, because they need access to data. But thanks to the development of ZK, Zero Knowledge Technologies, now we have a way to give access access of certain data attributes of user data to enterprises without revealing the actual data itself. So that's the most exciting development in this space right now, and we're confident they will help the adoption going forward.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Zero Knowledge Technology. I think it's a great compromise between total privacy and still allowing for room for compliance in certain cases. The big thing that concerns me at the moment is ChatGPT. In order to use this service, you need to put in your phone number. Imagine if you had to authenticate every time you wanted to do a Google search. That's completely absurd. And it got me thinking, which direction is actually being used here? Is it us using ChatGPT, or is ChatGPT using us to mine how we work? Because that's what all these free services do. They're mining you as your data. So while you're pulling data from their database, they're learning how you work. They're recording all your thoughts and the things that you search for to create patterns and other insights. So keep that in mind. I think ChatGPT and OpenAI in general is going to be one of the most dangerous companies of the next 10 years. And, you know, looking back, I think it'll be a little bit more obvious than it is today. But if you go through Sam Altman's Twitter, you're going to realize this guy's a complete sociopath. OpenAI is not open whatsoever, either in its business or its source code. And I mean, and if you see some of the other things he's brought into the world, like WorldCoin, which is mining your biometric data into this huge database in exchange for some literal shit coin, this guy might be the Antichrist. And now he's going to be basically, you know, entrusted with this new tool that's supposed to replace tens of thousands of jobs. That sounds like the end of the world to me. I mean, someone should be looking into this guy. This is crazy.
Yeah. So,
what are your thoughts on that? Am I reading too much into it?
Yeah. So, I'm not going to comment on the Sam individual as himself. But ChatGPT is a very interesting technology in a way that, first of all, to your audience, please be very careful using ChatGPT on the interface. So OpenAI has very clearly stated whatever you input on the interface when open, like OpenAI, and use ChatGPT over there, all the data will be ingested into the model training going forward. So it will be part of the database. So do not put any sensitive personal information into it. And for example, if I ask, hey, so my name is Yuan, I'm like 840, I graduated from here, please write a bio of me. Yes, they can do it, but someone else can actually query, say, hey, what is the age of Yuan? And the ChatGPT will know, because I already provide that information. If you have your driver's license input in your ChatGPT, your driver's license might as well just be open public information now. So be very, very careful when you use ChatGPT. And I think OpenAI has been very open regarding user data. So whatever you put there will be used, be mined by them, except if you use API. Now you have to say, hey, how much do I trust OpenAI in terms of their claim that if you use API to ask questions, the data supplied will not be part of the future modeling? We can only trust. That's all I can say. That we can only trust them, and it really depends on confidence and trust. So it is a technology. I think it will change our life, but it is very dangerous in a way that in the wrong hands, it can influence the opinion of the public. It may not be the positive way. And if everyone starts to rely on ChatGPT to make opinions, to make decisions, both business and personal decisions, they can be manipulated. And it's actually one thing that I've been looking into, how to make blockchain a companion to AI models, where we make sure that the AI models are intact in a way, in a positive way, so that it cannot be manipulated to, for example, influence the election. So it's a very dangerous technology. But same time, I also have certain flavor of a mad scientist. So I embrace that technology and say, hey, look, this is actually very exciting, can help a lot of things. We just need to be very responsible. I hope OpenAI is also a responsible company. They should know how dangerous this technology is in their hands right now.
Well said. Couldn't agree more. Let's talk about some of the things that you're working on. Give us the high-level overview of what is Nuvo.
Absolutely. So Nuvo is a decentralized platform that aims to get the next billion people in Web3. So we look at the current pain points of the industry so far. We have a lot of scaling options. That's what Matrix was about. So we can make the blockchain easier to use. We can make the blockchain faster and cheaper so people don't have to break a bank when using the blockchain. So I feel sorry for those BRC20 folks. Their one transaction may cost hundreds of dollars. But I think they're making money right now. So I think they're willing to pay for that transaction fees. But you can expect such experience to be optimal for general purpose use or mainstream use. Nuvo is there to really to bridge the gap so that everyone and their grandmas can start using blockchain-powered applications without even knowing what blockchain is, but get all the benefits of blockchains. So there are a lot of New types of applications, for example, DeFi is one. I really like DeFi because DeFi gives the power or the right to participate in certain financial tools that is not accessible for regular people in the traditional finance world. The transparency and the traceability of DeFi is also wonderful. Everyone make their own decisions. Of course, there's always risk associated with that, but it's their own decision. And then also the GameFi, where you kind of get some entertainment value at the same time, incentivized by a participation of the game ecosystem, which is rarely happen in the traditional gaming world, but it's really big in GameFi. I've been talking with some of the big game companies and platforms, and they're really interested in getting to this space. And Nuvo is a very natural a bridge for them to bring the existing user base they have without needing to create a new wallet, without needing to create new ID system. They can use the existing ID system through Nuvo to start using those GameFi applications. And on top of that, because when the user interact with the application, they actually generate a lot of data in terms of usage patterns, in terms of their history, transaction history, or some information that they have that they want to disclose in private with the application. For example, when the user using a dating app, they may have some sensitive preferences in terms of what they prefer to date in the application. And those can be kept in private, encrypted, in a private preserving way through Nuvo. And like I said earlier, we actually allow enterprise to access data with users' consent in a privacy preserving way, so that we will actually have a data analytics platform, allow enterprise still utilize the data, because it's actually very important for enterprise to access the data, but in a responsible way, meaning that A, user need to consent, and users aware how the data is being used, and B, if user choose, and if the enterprise is okay, we'll just share the data in a privacy preserving way. So that would be the main offering from the platform itself. Nuvo does have a lot of arms in terms of our vertical markets we're targeting at. Currently, we are focusing on the events and conferences. So in the future events, you may see Nuvo events associated with that. We have this gamification system in place to really reward the engagement of attendees in those conferences. Recently, we did a win with Anthropia. It's an online metaverse-based conference. I think the reception over there is pretty nice. So love to see more of that coming in. We're also working with education institutions so that we can issue digital certificate or issue a kind of a membership of the classroom, where while they track the progress of the learning, and they get badges along the way. For example, if you really get a very high mark on certain assignments, you get a nice badge to show off and stuff like that. And also worked with a healthcare business. That's going to take a while, but I think there's a lot of potential over there. And finally, we're looking at AI, AI as in data engine, because the platform will have a lot of data and a lot of encrypted and private data. So if someone needs to train an AI model, and they can actually pay users to get access to certain attributes of data so that they can incorporate into their models. So Nuvo will be a big data engine for those AI applications. So a lot to talk about. It's a big platform, but through and through, we really aim to get the next billion people into Web3 and keep them there. So that we can get the technology into mainstream adoption.
Love it. And what's your approach to get the next billion people there? You know, when I ask so many different developers, they say, well, we need to improve the UX, UI, the user experience and the user interface over here. I'd say marketing is a really big challenge in this industry, as well as education. There's just such a huge knowledge gap between what people are used to that maybe only check their email and, you know, still use Bing as a search engine, and the rest of us that are Web3 native. Mm-hmm. How are you going to build a bridge across that chasm and allow a billion users to come onto the platform?
Absolutely. So when we designed the user interface for Nuvo, especially for the non-veterans, meaning that the regular grandma, grandpas, We designed a way that is as close to the regular day-to-day experience they had with Web2 application as possible. A lot of user adoption is driven by partnership. So we actually partner with, for example, the big gaming platform or NFT collection platform, exchanges, and the social and guilds and all that. So we get a lot of users through those channels, because the one unique offering that we have compared to other competitors is we allow seamless ID integrations, meaning they don't really have to switch their IDs. For example, they can use Google logins, and they can use Facebook. I keep saying Facebook, by the way, sorry, but or Meta login, or Telegram or Twitter. We support a full range of different logins they can use. And once they log in, depends on, and they actually have a choice whether to assign a MetaMask account or not for those veterans, or for new people who have no idea what MetaMask is, they have a choice of a locally managed wallet, NPC-based wallet, or a full custodian wallet, up to user's choice. The experience would just be like operating a Web2 application. We do have a very interesting SDK that a lot of developers kind of really like to use. It's a RESTful API based SDK where we kind of abstract the whole blockchain operations, including the smart contract interactions. If the developer deploy a smart contract through a Nuvo platform, we actually generate a whole set of endpoints to interact with the smart contract through APIs instead of using like Web3 packages or E3s and something like that. And we handle all the wallet integrations through SDK as well. So it really saves a lot of time for developer to adopt this. And we actually had a demo where I show if someone just migrate a Web2 application to Web3 using the same SDK within a day. So there are a lot of opportunities where we can see a lot of users coming, a lot of new applications coming through a new platform.
So the platform itself, does it sit on top of Ethereum layer one, or does it sit on top of Midas, or is it its own chain?
So the platform works with all the chains. So far, we support EVM compatible chains because that's easier for us to kind of start with. In the future, we do want to expand into other chains like Solana, Avalanche, and probably the newest chain, Sui. So there are a lot of new chains popping up, but we're going to start with the EVM compatible chain first.
That's fantastic. Well, I really am impressed with what you built over there. I mean, just looking at the website, nuvosphere.io, beautiful design, very easy to navigate, just a simple button to log in, and then that's your portal to Web3 right there. And I think that's the optimal user experience. You go to a website, you log in, and that takes you to everything else that's built in that ecosystem. I don't know why Ethereum hasn't figured this out 5 years ago, but hey, it's an opportunity for somebody else, and it looks like you guys are capitalizing on it.
Yeah.
So love to see that. Let's talk a little bit about Midas, because it's another Ethereum L2. There's probably a dozen of them out there right now, but what makes Midas special and different from some of the others?
So first of all, Midas is fully community owned. We don't have any VC stake in a way. Sometimes it's an advantage, sometimes a disadvantage. But it's completely controlled by the community. And we are one of the pioneers to really push decentralization of L2, especially for rollups. Currently, I can say, because of certain technology choice, we are indeed still the cheapest L2 solutions out there. Of course, there are trade-offs here and there, but given the current comparison, I believe Midas is the best technology out there in terms of user experience and a good balance with the security. Recently, Avi has launched Midas. So it is the last missing piece of our DeFi foundation. So super excited about it. I can see TVL start to flow in. A lot of new opportunities. So absolutely for people, for the DeFi DJs, there's a good chance to get in. early for those protocols to get some nice APYs and rewards. Other than that, like I said, we are very serious about decentralization. We are working on a version of the decentralized sequencers so that we are no longer the only operator of the sequencer node anymore. Gives a lot of opportunities for community participation, large liquidity providers to really participate in running the nodes together. Once that is out, I'll be proud to announce that Mintis is the only L2 that doesn't have a maintenance window, meaning that in the future, when we upgrade the network for whatever new features we're going to introduce, the network will always run. So there'll be no downtime for L2 anymore on Mintis. So I think if you really ask, okay, what's different in Mintis compared to others, is our relentless pursuit for innovations that want to give the user the best user experience and cheapest way to work on blockchain so they can focus on innovations on the application itself. So they don't have to worry about all the different user experience or whether they need to optimize the smart contract in a way that it can be cheaper in the gas fees for users. They should focus on the actual application of the blockchain itself. And what kind of, other than DeFi, GameFi, SocialFi, what other things they can do, other things they can really take advantage of the uniqueness of the blockchain technology to give some utilities, to give some business values back to the user. I think that's what we want our developers to focus on.
I definitely need to find a layer two that I can rely on as the next bull market comes. There's no way in hell I'm going to be paying $400 Ethereum gas fees again. And maybe even worse now that, you know, we're already, you know, seeing $100 gas fees and we're still in the depths of a bear market.
Yes.
So I need to find a home that I can trust, but I have some fears, and maybe you can help give me some knowledge to alleviate these fears. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned that if I bridge my USDC or my ETH onto an L2 and the bridge gets hacked somehow, those bridge tokens that I've received are going to be worthless. Is this still a concern in this day and age, or has that been specifically solved with Mintis and other L2s? What are your thoughts on this?
So I think Mintis, Optimism, Arbitron, we have been in the industry for a long while. We have our TVLs in different stages. Mintis even was close to 1 billion TVL at one point. Before the TVL start to switch to other chains, but hey, they're coming back. So the bridges that we use is well tested. Has been tested at time, has been tested by a whole bunch of white hackers. So I think Optimism has 1 million bounty. Mintis also has 1 million bounty. So it's actually quite lucrative for hackers to try to find problems in those bridges. So far, there has been no exploration, and there's no hacking whatsoever, or possible hacking whatsoever during the for those bridge contracts. So I'm quite confident. That those bridges are pretty safe. I think the key here, especially for Optimism Rollup, is it has the 7-day finalization window. So even if something is wrong, we actually have 7 days to kind of find a way to remedy it. So instead of like immediate issue, for example, if something in the layer two got hacked on the layer two side and a breach happened unexpectedly, as operators and as a community, we can actually vote to freeze the breach and to remedy the breach so that the actual assets of the users can be well protected. So in a way, there's a reason why there are so much TVLs being locked in the Optimism Rollup right now, because it's actually relatively safer from the in terms of like risk mitigation point of view. But still, saying that, I'm very, very confident about the safety of the bridge contracts right now. After 2 years of like usage, with 8 billion TVLs in total across all the different protocols, I have very high confidence.
Well, I appreciate your candor for all that. And I do feel better after hearing it. After everything we saw in 2022, everything getting attacked under the sun, it seemed like everything that could fail did. And Midas wasn't on the Grim Reaper's list at that point. So that's good to know. And I also like that there's, you know, some kind of rollback period before complete finalization. So there is some way to correct a really, really major issue.
Yeah, it's almost like a last resort. Yeah, it's almost like a last resort. We would definitely do not want to use that. But it is there just to, in case something did missed in our codes and something got exploited, we still have a last line of defense.
That's good to know. And I know there's a lot of people out there that really feel like blockchain should be all about immutability and finality. But maybe that doesn't have to occur in just a couple seconds. And having a window of time to try and, you know, really save your entire system.
Yeah.
Because if it's not there, who's going to trust it?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how I feel about Ethereum L1 right now. You know, ever since, you know, they forked into Ethereum Classic, you know, we've all been wondering, you know, is this the right thing to do to roll back the chain and if there's a giant hack? Well, you can't do that every day. But it seems like there's a giant hack every day on Ethereum. So there's got to be a better way. And it should, you know, more eyes should be looking at what you've done over there at Midas. So really appreciate everything you built over there. And we want to keep tabs on it. But we got to let you go for the moment. But looking forward to having you back on to learn some more about privacy and hear your thoughts. But in the meantime, where can people follow you to get some more of your ideas and follow on what you're doing?
Oh, absolutely. You can people can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is I think it's the good boss too. So it should be quite easily rememberable. Absolutely follow me there in Twitter. I sometimes share some random thoughts on that. Sometimes it's garbage. Sometimes it can be wisdom. I don't know.
Sounds a lot like mine.
Absolutely follow me.
Cool. And check out NouveauSphere.io and Midas.io and check out those ecosystems. There's a lot to like over there. And we'll be back later on this week with another great podcast here at Crypto 101.
Well, thank you.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.